Welcome to Spiritually Naked, where physical and non-physical worlds collide, offering a refreshing concoction of optimism and realism. It's time to strip down the barriers of limiting beliefs, to master the art of manifestation and synchronized living. Everything you need to live an inspired, awakened life is within your grasp. Start creating the life you desire today with Spiritually Naked as your guide to simplifying complicated issues for real life change. Now here are your hosts, Steve and Stephanie Banks.
Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here tonight on Spiritually Naked. I'm your host, Stephen Banks, and I'm here with my partner and co-host, Stephanie Banks, who in the second portion of our program will channel for us a collective consciousness named Solomon. But first, we'd like to introduce you. Our guest that we have with us tonight is Joe Hernandez. And on January 6, 2000, after an accident at work, Joe died in the hospital, flatlining for just over 5 minutes. Though previously an atheist and skeptic, he discovered the most profoundly beautiful place and experienced more life and peace than he had ever imagined was possible. After 3 years of struggling with his experience, on November 8th, 2003, the evening of his 50th birthday, he had a second extraordinary out-of-body journey, which forced him to finally accept his new path. And Joe's goal is to share his understanding, love, and peace through the portal of his intuition, healing gifts, and paintings. And thank you for being here with us, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
This is our pleasure. For me, firsthand, I've seen your work and I've felt it. It's more important to say I felt your work than I've seen it, because really, when I saw those pieces at the festival that we were at, I felt so much internal movement. It just blew me away.
Obviously, because you're getting right to the, we haven't even talked about his art yet.
Well, okay. So yeah, that's true. It did. It was, I've been
Tell
excited.
Tell us about your art, Joe.
I've been excited to talk about this. Yeah.
Yeah. The art is an expression. It's just trying to capture something that, was part of my experience. So I have great regard for it, obviously, but, you know, it's my attempt to recapture that aspect of my journey, because one of the things that I experienced was this sense of color having life, and that it had this great sense of movement. So that became like my passion, but it wasn't something that I started to do right away, because being an atheist and an electrical engineer, I kind of viewed myself more as a scientist than a, you know, so when it came to faith, I just didn't have any, and I thought church was more of a business, and, you know, so, my parents, my mother was a Catholic, so she had her sense of faith. I just couldn't share that. So it made my experience very profound.
So what happened on, in the intro, I'm really curious, what happened on the second occasion on November the 8th?
Well, November the 8th was actually when I was able to kind of embrace this, because it was a very peculiar day, because I just felt very out of it, and I just had this sense of hearing all these voices and hearing all these voices, and at the time, because I thought I was mentally ill, I kept trying to reach out to a psychologist that I was working with, and she was unavailable. It was a weekend. And I went to bed that night. We had a surprise party, but it was really an interesting day because we had a lunar eclipse. And then they had this harmonic convergence or whatever it was. And what that was, that six planets created the star David. And that's not going to happen for another 3,000 years. So I went to bed and I just had this sense that the ceiling opened up. And sometimes I still find it strange, the scientists and they get in the way, but kind of like the ceiling opened up and I just left. I just kind of flew up, and I just went on this journey. And the thing about it is that I recall looking back after I had gone up for a while, and I could see like my body laying in the bed still, and I continued on this journey. I got to this point where I was way, way out in deep space somewhere, And again, I looked back and then I saw myself kind of like at this fringe, kind of like some kind of a film. And I realized that that was my soul as I continued on this journey, and that my soul couldn't continue. You had to be in a pure form. So I felt that you had to be spirit to keep going from that point on. And I got to this space where I saw like a black hole, and I saw these like stones kind of moving over it, and these hieroglyphics just get burned into them. And then they would just get sucked into this black hole and reemerge on the bottom, and they would laugh, and it was just pretty peculiar. But there was knowledge being presented to me as these things got burned into these stones. I then continued on the journey, and I got to this space where I saw, incredibly enough, a unicorn. And it was made out of this silver material that was very almost like sand. And I went up to it, and I finally went on it. And he started to move down this long tube. And it felt like a cord, almost like an umbilical cord. And as it ran down this cord, I could see every time his hooves hit the bottom, it would turn into the material that the cord was. It was a silver cord. And even if I reached up with my hand and I touched it, the same thing, my hand would just become that. It took me down this path, and it was like my life journey. So I literally saw myself being born, and I saw myself at one point pass. And then there was this space where it was kind of like empty, and then all of a sudden I reemerged as a separate, you know, as a new person, I guess. You know, I was an Asian, and incredibly enough, a woman, and that was going to be the next life that I led. You know, so it was very provoking in terms of thought, but you know, more importantly, it kind of made me feel that I had really lost it. And then a couple of days later, I just heard this voice in my ear, and she told me her name was Mary. And I decided that I had to embrace it. So about a month after that, I actually started doing these paintings that Stephen was talking about. And my life just took a different path. So I stopped engineering, and I decided that this was where I needed to be, and where I would be most useful. And perhaps this was the reason why I came back to, you know, to try to capture something that I had seen in this art and maybe leave it in this space so that other people can derive whatever they need from it.
Wow.
That's an incredible story for sure.
And that's only part two.
Yeah, that's just...
We're not going in the best order here. We didn't even start with... We bypassed part one altogether. But I'm curious, so let's just go back to the art. I was pretty busy during that festival, but I remember Steve just coming running in and out of our booth saying, you got to come meet him. You got to come meet this guy. I met this the best guy. You should see his art stuff. And he was telling me then, I think, if I remember correctly, that you also do use your art in the hospitals for healing, or I can't remember exactly what he said. Are you using your art for specifically for healing with other people?
Yes. We created a mindfulness practice, and I use the art because the art, just so I describe a little bit of the art so maybe you can get a little bit of an understanding of it, it starts with a black canvas, and it might start with an image of me. So then I just keep painting over and over it, and you know, some of the images could have like 200 layers of paint. And the concept was, if I'm way back there somewhere, how do I find myself? You know, how do I find myself with all these things that happen in our lives that kind of get in the way and kind of wrap themselves around us, you know, these protective mechanisms that we build, you know, when something traumatic happens or something, you know, bad happens to us, we kind of build these protection mechanisms. And the art is engineered to, the original concept of the art was to help us to find ourselves back there somewhere. And the reason that is, so I'm going to talk a little bit about my actual experience of dying. There was this moment when I was in the corner of the room watching, you know, the medical crew trying to revive me. And I had this thought that said, that's me and I'm dead. And then I asked myself this question, and this is a question that actually changed my life. And the question was, but if that's me, then who am I? So my journey is to really find out who I really am. I know I'm not this. I know I'm not this. You know, to me, my body is just a vessel. You know, Jose is just a name that I have in this life. And this is the vessel that I'm using now. But I want to find out not who the vessel is, but who's behind this vessel. In other words, who am I really? You know, who am I, a spirit? Who, you know, and even for me, there's a lot of uncertainty. I just know I'm trying to find who I really am. And so I created the art with that mindset, you know, that if we were to journey through our lives, you know, and peel back all these layers that we've created around us, we could find the true person, the true being that we are. And so that's kind of like the reason I created it. And so the mindfulness practice is engineered to help you to peel back a lot of these things, these issues, these events that happen in our lives, and get back to the core of who we really are, you know, the essence of our being, and, you know, make not peace with it, but reunite in a way. You know, I feel we're not disconnected, but there's so much stuff in the way that we get a sense of disconnect.
Yeah, that's so true.
So the mindfulness practice is engineered to help people find who they really are. And it's interesting because we use the art to get there.
Yeah, and it is fascinating. It is. I was completely moved by what I experienced when I was with your art. So I could see the impact that it could have for people, for sure. So we were getting ahead of ourselves. I was very curious, though, the fact that you'd mentioned that you were an atheist prior to your NDE. At what point, was it the first one or was it after the second one that you started asking those questions that you were saying?
Yeah, well, it's both. The first one created the question, and because I still had this way of viewing everything from a scientific perspective or from a numbers viewpoint, I was trying to like almost pretend that that event didn't happen. So it's exactly what I'm talking about, the mindfulness practice. I was trying to build some kind of a wall around me to kind of shield me from that event. So I hadn't embraced it. It was actually the second one where I finally was able to get past that thought that something was wrong with me and kind of accept that maybe this is the way my life is going to be moving forward. I couldn't deny it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, being an atheist made my dying very difficult because when I was dying, I had like no safety valve. So I didn't believe in afterlife. I didn't believe in any, that I was going to go anywhere. So I viewed myself literally as a TV that gets turned off. And something was going to pull that switch and I was just going to disappear. So while that event was incredibly profound and I had the most amazing journey, it's hard to believe that for 3.5 years I was trying to shut that down and pretend that it didn't happen. And I was hiding behind the world of psychiatry and telling myself that something was wrong with me and, you know, that that's not really what happened. So, you know, you're running through, you know, all these ideas go through your head. And, you know, I really didn't talk about my experience for several years. And the reason was I was in hospital for 3 months after I had that experience. And when I could finally talk, I asked my cardiologist, you know, I told him, you know, I think I went somewhere. And he looked at me and he just said no. And his answer was so like, you know, definite.
Yeah.
And he said, no, that was just a chemical reaction in your brain. You know, your heart stopped, but your brain is still alive for 2 minutes. And I just said to him, yeah, but I remember everything you guys did till the end. So I was like, for the entire 5 minutes, I kind of could tell them exactly what they were doing. And he was like a bit surprised, but he still was, no, that was just a chemical reaction in your brain. So I kind of said, wow, that means I'm losing my mind. And so that's an easy thing to do when something profound happens to us, is to hide behind something that we might feel comfort in, even though it was, in my case, going to see a shrink and saying, my mind is broken, fix me. So yeah, it was actually both. But the second one allowed me to embrace it in a way that I could make it something that I thought might be useful. So it gave me purpose. It gave me a reason for coming back.
I think it's really hard to ignore those signs for too long. Like, you just, things keep happening. That's when I look back before my sort of last big wake up call with my bike accident, I think back and I can pinpoint times in my life where, you know, that it was an experience that seemed so profound, but I wasn't really giving it any attention. And then they just sort of get bigger and bigger until you finally listen and realize that this is your soul speaking. This is who you are coming into play with this vessel. And like you say, coming together as one. And that's, to me, what this life is about. And I love the way you talk about the layers. And when you look at it that way, every layer that you're creating is really based upon somebody else's belief system. And what you're talking about is getting, removing those layers. They're still sort of a part of you, but you're removing them so that you can see that true, authentic part of you, that soul aspect. Yes?
Exactly. You know, and the fact is, we can't make these layers disappear. They don't just go away. They're a part of our life. You know, so if I had a traumatic experience, you know, it doesn't mean that I forget that it happened and, ooh, it's gone. It's not gone. That experience is what makes me who I am today. It's part of all these things that make me who I am. But the idea is, how do I take that experience, even though it was negative, and now maybe look at it from a different perspective, almost like a third person, and take the fear component out of it and look at it as something that maybe I could take this energy and turn it around and use it for something that might be more constructive in my life, instead of allowing it to just be a weight or something that drags me down. You know, because even though we don't think of things, it's quite often, you know, they're in our subconscious. They kind of, they're always there. They never go away. So, you know, that's the mindset there.
Yeah.
You know, and you had this near-death experience yourself, so you understand the sense of disconnect that we get.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made me feel like I couldn't, that there was something wrong with me. I just felt disconnected from everything.
Right. And like you said earlier, though, you're not, none of us are disconnected. That's impossible. But it's the, you termed it being, you're just sort of clouded with these layers. I sort of envision it of being just slightly out of alignment with it completely. So you're benefiting from all that goes along with that, like you say, the nature or the knowledge and the wisdom that goes along with being in alignment, feeling more connected.
Exactly. You know, I learned a lot since then, and what I've learned is really that we're never very far from anything, in a sense, right? So while I felt lost during those years, and while I was trying to find a magic pill that some psychologist could give me, a psychiatrist, and that would make this all go away, you know, the reality is that, you know, there was really no need for that. That was just fear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I learned that, you know, even just from my dying experience, when we crossed, my sense was that wherever I was, it was only this great sense of love and peace and calm and this sense of oneness. So what I think here is that the only thing lacking in that other space is that component of fear that exists in this world and this space. So without that, you know, we live a totally different life. And that's kind of like what's happened to me. I removed some of the fear behind this issue and embraced it. And once you embrace it, you find how amazing and wonderful that sense is. There's a great sense of freedom that we kind of gain when we begin to lose fear. You know, fear, it kind of puts us in a cage. It keeps us in a bubble, you know, and once we get beyond that bubble, you realize there's so much more.
Yeah, so true. And so many of us on the planet are, well, we suffer from that from experience to experience, but I agree with you when we can recognize it as what it is in terms of fear and letting it go. It is very, very enlightening and liberating. I'm just curious, Joe, were you an artist prior to your accident? Did you paint prior to your NDEs?
No, I never painted a page in my life. I mean, other than doodle, it was just something that wasn't in my world at that time. You know, it wasn't something that was there for me. You know, my focus was more in math and science. I did enjoy photography, but photography is one thing and painting is something else. So there might have been an artistic component to photography, but this was something very different. So I believe it was something that I brought back, you know, some innate ability to paint, whereas before it was just not nowhere in my life. It doesn't mean that it wasn't there. It just means that I had never recognized it or integrated it into my life. So, you know, most people believe that it was just something that came back with me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah,
I feel like it's more like rather than coming back with you, you opened it up.
Yeah, you already had it within you. Yeah.
We have a friend, and she was surrounded by a pack of wolves, her sister was, and she wasn't attacked, but the fear that was involved, and she lost one of her dogs to the wolves in the process, and it was a very traumatic experience for her. And 2 days later, she started painting the most beautiful paintings. She's from here, and she's from Merritt, and I was blown away.
Yeah, me too. That's true. That she was painting beautiful horses.
Yeah.
So I think it's something that's already there. It's just something needs to kind of like allow you to look at it or open it up or tap into it.
Mm-hmm. You got to break that box open.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. and it, some of us need to get hit over the head with a sledgehammer, and some of us just naturally kind of move in that direction. You know, in my case, I needed to kind of get that wake up call, which was that experience of dying.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And Stephanie as well.
Yeah, it's that trauma that I think catapults people when, you know, of course you can move into alignment and become more awakened and enlightened with smaller events happening, but it seems like the bigger the trauma, the greater the potential.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because we see so many things as, you know, during our life path, you know, when we're little, as we grow up, I grew up in an inner city. I grew up in South Bronx in New York. And, you know, I saw a lot of quite traumatic events. But those, whilst they were traumatic, I seem removed from them in the sense that they were happening to other people. But when they happen to you, it just changes the texture and the sense of it and just drives it home, literally. And you know, it's amazing that sometimes it takes something that intense to kind of bring something out of you that can be often so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening to our, you know, as a collective, as humans, that's really how things are. Things tend to need to be really quite uncomfortable before we'll really make any change, unless we're really inspired to make that change. So I would, before we're out of time here, Joe, I'd like to speak with you about your healing program that you're using, the inner immersion modality. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a 2.5 hour event. It's I call it a workshop. It's a practice, so you have to look at it kind of like yoga. It's something that you don't do once, but I think you do 4, 5, or 6 times, And the idea is to begin to get to that space where we were just talking about. How do we tap into our creativity? How do we tap into the positive things that were born within us and kind of allow them to emerge and so we could actually utilize them in life? And, you know, whilst the first few tend to be very deep and intense because we experience a lot of what we re-experience a lot of what's happened in our lives, you know, that experience is very profound in the sense that the concept is to look at it at, like I say, just removed. So I'm observing what happened to me rather than I'm experiencing what happened to me. And the idea is to get people to not shed them because we, as we said before, we can't let go of it. If I was abused, I can't make believe it never happened. But how do I take that event and that experience and maybe turn it around? And by that, I mean, maybe I could help somebody else. And maybe that creates some kind of fulfillment in me, and it creates freedom. It creates that sense that I free myself, not from the event, but from the terror and the fear that it had created, and remove that wall that it built around me, that protection mechanism that makes me react to other people in a very different way than I would have reacted if I hadn't had those experiences. So the practice is engineered to help people just deal with a lot of these very serious issues. And when I work with these people in the beginning, you know, most people that come to you are people that have tried everything else. And it's kind of like, this is it. But I found that it really changes people's lives. And it's been very effective with a lot of issues. So with molestation, you know, abuse, with addiction issues, and we were able to kind of integrate it into some addiction centers and rehab centers, and you know, you got the whole gamut there, you know, so it goes from anything. But I find that it helps people in general just find themselves and have a sense of calm in their life, and the practice allows you to evolve a sense of, I could do this at home. It's a toolbox that you take home after a while. And the idea is, oh, I feel really like something's going on right now, and I could kind of do this at home and bring myself down and look at it with my real eyes instead of looking at it with the eyes here that make it a lot bigger or a lot more than it really is.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. It's I think the key point that I'm taking out of that is that it's a practice. And that's what I speak about as well, is that this is a practice. It's, you know, it's not a one-time deal. We're living life, and we have to learn these things. Well, we don't have to. I hear Solomon loud and clear whenever I say have to. We might benefit from understanding that in every moment of every day, we have the opportunity to practice being that conscious human being.
Exactly. And it's just something that, you know, sometimes we get really like troubled, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Who can I reach out to? What can I do? And before we do something that we might not be able to come back from, the idea is, now you know how to do this. You could do it at home. And you know what? It'll allow you to wait till tomorrow or the next day to talk to somebody if you need to. But the idea is just to bring you down and bring you back to the moment and bring you to the present. And it does that in that very subtle way, because it uses the vibration of color. It uses, there's music and sound therapy. There's a guided meditation. There's a healing touch when we do it in the workshop. And it's interesting because it's using all these practices that we already know that they work and they help people come down. But I think when you combine them all together, it's just incredibly powerful.
Yeah, it sounds like it, absolutely. And it is. I mean, I've witnessed those modalities firsthand, and it is very powerful. But we're out of time for this portion of the program. Joe, do you want to let everyone know where they can find you, your art, the inner immersion modality practice information?
Yeah, you can find me at the website. is innerimmersion.com, and you'll be able to kind of get a real good idea of it right there. It's kind of a bit clinical because we work with a lot of psychotherapists and the mental health world. You can find us there. And we're also on Facebook. I think it's Inner Immersion. Yeah. So we're on Facebook, and yeah, you'll be able to see some of the art there, and it's pretty cool.
Stay tuned, and we'll be back with Joe and Solomon.
It is our pleasure to be here with you in this time in your space as we come together to create a life for you, for all of you, that is inspired by the soul aspect of yourselves, that part of you that is connected to creation, that part of you that is always connected regardless of, like you were speaking about earlier, feeling as though you are disconnected from it. You can never be disconnected from this part of you. It is part of you. We acknowledge the understanding that it feels as though there are times in your lives where you are separated from that aspect of wholeness. But we are here to support you on your journeys as you are guided back toward that understanding, toward that feeling, toward that, let's say, reconnection of all that is. We would like to offer you this opportunity to put forth any questions and queries, and we will do our best to appease your curiosities.
Okay. So my first question is I have had some pretty specific visions relating to the U.S., in particular, which I have been reluctant to share widely. Whenever I am asked about where things are going with the world, I tend to defer and tell people that nothing is fixed. We're in a continuous state of creating this reality, and by acting from a place of love and not fear, we can alter the course of humanity for the better. So my question is what is your advice in that regard? Where are we're moving, you know, in terms of global warming and a lot of these things that seem to be like hanging over our world right now?
First of all, we would like to relay that we are in accordance with your beliefs, that this is not a fixed experience that you are in. It is a malleable experience. There are opportunities for shifts and changes and transformations in every moment of every day. At this point in your evolution, there seems to be a conflict internally within all of you that is translating into a conflict collectively. In other words, there is a heightened state of separation from those who wish to propel in a direction of communal living, in a direction of unification, and those that are moving in the direction of separation, of limitation, of creating boundaries. Yes, this seems to be heightened at this time in your state of evolution as a collective group of human beings. Where you move from here is an individual choice that manifests into a collective understanding, a collective agreement. In other words, it is up to each and every one of you individually to decide which direction you choose to go. It is within this choice, it is within this perception of your life and how you are interacting with those around you that you will build a relationship with the world you are wishing to create. Does this make sense?
Yeah. So Solomon, is there a sense of like divide, of division that has been going on obviously for a while, and my sense is that it's something that's been hidden, kind of like an underground type of sense. And I get a sense of almost like we're like pre-World War II. And a lot of the wonderful gains that we have had and made as humanity, we're at a fringe or a space where we might be losing some of those valuable rights. You know, so I feel like a lot of people are kind of moving in kind of like a sense of no man's land and kind of fraught with fear. you know, what advice can you give to people in that state, you know, to kind of cling or hang on to whatever belief they have and that things can become or can improve?
First of all, we would like to suggest to not focus so much on the ways of others. In other words, yes, there will always be those, at least for the foreseeable future, that are fearful, that are coming from a mindset of separation, of limitation, of hatred, of anger, of fear, of all of these attributes that are part of the human characteristics to date. By focusing on those people, there is the momentum within you to move in that direction to a certain degree. We understand that there is compassion and sensitivities that are best afforded to those people, yes, but there is a difference between offering support and compassion from a level of pure joy, pure love, pure happiness, not worrying or fretting about the actions of others. This will only help catapult that movement. Is this making sense?
Yeah, yeah. You know, my sense is that there's a lot of pull in that direction from many people, simply because of the environment that they're in, and for people like us who are kind of on the other side of that spectrum, where we're saying, you know, if we kind of let go of some of this, we diffuse it, because I feel that the fear that the people have on that side is what's driving it. It's like fuel. It gives it more and more energy. Whereas I think if we diffuse it, and, you know, by not making it such a big deal, by taking away strength, literally by removing our attention from it, that might be the path. But you know, it's easy to explain that, but you know, how do people integrate that into their life when they feel that they could be losing so many things that they feel they own?
You cannot, no matter how much you wish to, you cannot remove somebody else's fear for them. Therefore, there is no sense in worrying about it, because, like you say, you will only be fueling that particular fire. From an individual standpoint, what one needs to recognize is that the only way to keep moving in a more desirable direction is to concentrate on the idea of love and compassion, sincerity, authenticity, genuine, being honest, being truthful, living from a state of balance, living from a state of personal awareness, of consciousness. And within that state, there is no room for worry or fear or regret or guilt or judgment. There is only love, compassion, honesty, all of these attributes of being a human being that translate into being a soulful being. Now, yes, there is the idea of being a human being, and you are a human being living a day-to-day life where situations and experiences within your planet will be imparted upon you by way of knowledge. So we are not suggesting separating for yourself from the idea that these occurrences are happening, that there are those people in the world that are in a fearful state, acting in their own particular manner based upon that fear. But your responsibility is not to remove their fear. Your responsibility to the planet, to yourself, to your human family, is to express yourself from the state of love and compassion always. And it is through that expression that you will reach a wider audience, that you will create more momentum in the direction that you are choosing to go, which is based upon these principles, yes?
Right, right. Yeah, because I feel that and I just feel it personally, and just what I sense from perhaps whatever my spirit guides are, you know, that there's a movement in two ways. So I feel like we've chosen a path which is more like a river, where we allow it to take us wherever it needs to go, and that some of these people have just chosen a path where there's a lot of resistance. And I understand that we can't change them.
But you can facilitate healing within them by ways in which, like yourself, are putting forth to the world through your art. You can facilitate healing on a deep level, but not necessarily for the intent of saving the world. The intent would be more along the lines of expressing love, expressing compassion, expressing sincerity, expressing joy, expressing beauty and magnificence to the world around you.
Right, right. Yeah, and I understand it's one person at a time. We can only help so many people or work with so many people and so interact with so many people, but, you know, and it's a one-on-one, you know, I could help one person at a time, and maybe in our whole lifetime we only help literally a few people, but there's a sense of fulfillment that comes with that. And yeah, I do thank you for that answer. And I have one more question. And this question is almost a curiosity. So I've just moved here from the United States into the Okanagan, and I've had the most curious response, you know, and I had this conversation with Steven actually a while back, but it's a question that kind of relates to, I've met a lot of people, and in the last 3 or 4 weeks, I've met many people that have said to me, I know you. And because I've met so many people in the last 5 or 6 months that we've been up here, I say, well, it could be, where did we meet? And yeah, we met over here. And I say, when was that? That was a year ago. And I would look at them and say, you know what? But I've only been here like 5 months. So it couldn't be. And what I find curious about it is that they're so insistent. No, I met you a year ago, and it's kind of like I can't convince them otherwise. In the beginning, I was like, you know, no, I've only been here 5 months, but then it's happened so often that I just don't say anything, you know, I just go with the flow, and it's curious. So I'm trying to understand what might that be.
You have traveled here prior to your move here. You have infused your soul, your spirit, your energetic vibration into many in this area that you are now residing prior to your physical move here.
Yeah, because I was thinking personally, you know, multidimensional perhaps, or from a more quantum perspective, but
yes, there is no limitation to where your energetic flow flows to. This is something that all of you do in the dream state. This is something that all of you do through meditation. This is something that all of you do through out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, dying experiences, as you say. This is something that many of you do from a, when you're awake, yet going about your regular activities. There is more going on within and around you and through you than we could possibly discuss in this short period of time. And we would also have a difficult time relaying to you exactly what is happening. But you, yeah, all of you, have the ability to infuse your energy anywhere at any time. You knew from a soul level where you were going to be down the road. There was a vibration that went along. You were lining this up. You were orchestrating what needed to happen. You knew it before you actually knew it. Yes? How you explain your dying experience was, if this is me, who am I? It's the same kind of concept. This is you, right, waiting for this move that you don't even really realize is happening yet, while the I am part is orchestrating all of that to happen. Now, the people around you that recognize you, that know you, that feel as though they've met you, They have. They're just not necessarily understanding it from a soul level, from a energetic level. And that's okay. There's no need to define when and where and how and all of the details. The important aspect is the bond that was created at that time. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. It wasn't an alarming thing. It was just very kind of like thought-provoking in the sense that a part of you kind of says, I was here. And maybe that ultimately what physically brought me here. And, you know, it kind of made me think of the experience that I had when I kind of like went to the ceiling of my room and it kind of opened up. So it made me feel like the alternate reality. But there was a tremendous sense of calm and peace associated with the, you know, every time this happened. And I find it to be like a sense of this is the way it's supposed to be. This is, you know, this is real. You know, this is real to them. It's real to me. And it's part of this path that we've undertaken. And, you know, so from a perspective of spirit, I feel that, you know, we can be and do so many things at the same time. You know, we're not restricted to the conscious space, you know. So, yeah, I do agree with everything you said. It's quite lovely.
That sense of warmth, that sense of security, that sense of peace that goes along with those meetings and those interactions is the sense of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily being able to pinpoint from the level of the human brain where that recognition is originating from. And this is the part that creates curiosity. How do I know this person? Where do I know this person from? Well, chances are you don't know them as a person. That's why you're not connecting the recognition. You know them as a soul being. You know them as an energetic being because that is how you have interacted in the past.
Right. You know, and I think just personally, I think people that have had an experience and it doesn't necessarily have to be a near-death experience. There's so many profound experiences that we have. I feel that it kind of allows for an awareness or knowing of these events so they don't really sound extraordinary. They sound quite normal.
And many of you have these experiences. Mm-hmm. There is this idea of running into somebody, saying hello for the first time, and then walking away from that experience and never seeing that person again, but feeling as though you have known them all along and that you will see them again. Yes? Does this sound familiar?
Right. Right.
This happens to all of you. This happens on a level of understanding that far surpasses what the brain can comprehend. It is that of a feeling that is unexplainable through words. And this is because you have all lived and are living multiple lifetimes, and beings, spiritual beings, energetic beings, human beings, will come in and out of another's experience all the time. Now, you're developing relationships on different levels of energetic vibration with different beings. And so when you have this feeling of connection, when you have this feeling of knowing that you know this being, even though you don't really know how or why, just know that you do. And now where does that lead you? Where does that lead you with this person? How are you going to work together in this lifetime? What is the purpose of this reunification? That's the question, not how or why, but now what? What do we do with one another? Where is this leading us? And being open to the intuitive part of you that is leading and guiding you through this experience. Does this make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, to me, it just cements the concept of, you know, when we first came to the Okanagan, you know, our mindset was that we were probably going to be here 6 months and then relocate to London. But when we came here, all these events that have happened have just kind of like really cemented concept of staying here and making our life here, because this is where we belong. So I think maybe those things also are, from my perspective, just some kind of a validation that, you know, this is where we need to be now. And it doesn't mean you're going to be here always, but you need, it's somewhere that you should be now and kind of like belong.
And this is exactly what we're talking about. This is exactly what we're talking about. By your interactions and listening to that, to your innate self, your intuitive self that is showing you, maybe this is perhaps where we will stay for a while. This is exactly what we're talking about. It sounds simple, but many of you ignore the symbolism that is happening in each and every experience that transpires in your life. So exactly. We give you credit for listening and paying attention. You aren't going anywhere anytime soon. Get used to the Okanagan. No.
Yes.
We would like to thank you for this experience. We would like to thank you for this exchange. We would like to thank you for contributing to those around you, to the world around you, in the way that you do. We acknowledge and appreciate your efforts as a human being living as a unified energetic being. We look forward to our next.
And I just want to say that I appreciate immensely what has been said and this exchange, and I have great respect and honor for your being. And I appreciate immensely this talk, and I imagine that it will only fortify me and allow me to move forward and with more clarity.
Yes. Don't fortify yourself too much or you might get stuck.
Yep.
We look forward to our next exchange.
Thank you, Solomon.
Thank you, Solomon.
That's pretty funny. It's
yeah.
They were enjoying that. Yeah, so I guess you're here to stay in the Okanagan for now, hey, and do some work. And
you're fortified.
Yeah.
And we've been really blessed because I started doing the workshop in Vernon. So I'm doing a workshop there April 1st at the Tidal Elements. And it's at 5:30. So yeah, I've been able to, in such a short time, kind of move up this corridor, which I find so fascinating.
Well, it's because it's because you're you and you're trying to be nothing but you, and you're sharing what you've learned, what you've seen, what you've created, and you know, we'll support you all the way. Make sure you send us those links for all the local people.
That. Likewise, and you know, it's almost like we don't love what we do. It goes so beyond that. It's like we are what we do.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
And,
yeah.
You know, I feel like what we do, you know, and I'm sure you do the same. You know, what drives it is not, it's just this deep passion and this knowing that it's truth. And it's such an amazing thing to kind of drive you, you know, when we think most of us go to work each morning and so many of us kind of like just go there because this is what we got to do to earn a living and kind of like pay our bills. And they really don't like what they do. They don't enjoy it at all. And here, there is such a wonderful sense of accomplishment simply because we know we're changing lives and helping people to move on a path that is meant for them.
Mm-hmm. And by simply doing, like you say, being what you're doing, being what you love.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think one of the points that Solomon was trying to drive home is that to do those beautiful things and to share in the way you are for all of us, is true for all of us, without the ulterior motive of changing anyone, just simply being.
Exactly.
And through that being of it, those that find a change within based on what you're doing and what you're presenting, that's going to be their choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they're ready,
and
they'll make the change.
Exactly. And the change is really based on what do they need? When you go to an event, what do I need? Not necessarily what am I looking for or what do I think I need, but what do I really need? And And I think a lot of these practices that we do kind of really go there, you know, because I always ask people, you know, write down an intention. And then I kind of have a lot of intentions that I say, pick one of these. And universe gives them the one intention. And so often you hear how right on is the one that they picked versus the one that they wrote. And, you know, it's from my sense, they really drive or get what they need. And that's the beauty, I think, of what we do. You know, we don't have that sense when we do it. All we know is that we're going to do it and we're going to put it out there and we're going to allow this to work the way it needs to work. And it works different with everybody.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it will work differently with everybody because we are all different.
Exactly. You know, and we have different needs, you know, and I think that's where we become very pliable, very flexible. You know, we're not, there's no rigidity in the practice. The practice is like water. It's very fluid. So it moves and it fills within each whatever it is that they need.
Exactly. And I think, you know, driving that point home, that nothing about life is rigid. And the more rigid we try to make it, the more rigid it becomes, when really what we're striving for is to have fluidity, that freedom,
yeah,
and to move exactly beyond those limitations and to become, you mentioned water, and I use water a lot because, you know, aside from this part of who I am, I'm also a landscaper by trade. So we work with water, mm-hmm, and we're always, you know, trying to, as human beings, I think, follow the example of water, taking the path of least resistance, knowing right that by taking that path, it doesn't matter what pops up on our way, we're going to move it around. We're going to move around it with fluidness and with ease and with grace, with the trust in ourselves and in the universe and in our connection to something greater and grander than, as you say, these vessels that we're in.
Exactly. And, you know, as water, we're going to have some little bumps and a twist and turn, but the idea is that the water moves.
Maybe a tidal wave here and there.
Yeah, it just moves. You know, so if there's a rock in the river, it just kind of moves over it or around it. It doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm. And eventually it starts wearing away those rocks and those layers.
Exactly.
And it'll just get to where it needs to go without forcing. I mean, water can be forceful, but in a very gentle sort of way.
Mm-hmm. Even when it exactly meets the shore, there's no resistance.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, and I think life, one of the things these experiences taught me was, you know, we have a tendency to resist. You know, and I think it's that resistance which kind of holds us back. It's kind of like a break. And a lot of times, if we just kind of let ourselves go and just go with the moment, you find that there was really no need for the resistance. You know, that the resistance is really some form of fear that we have.
Right.
Always, yeah. The resistance is always some form of fear within us. But we're out of time for today, Joe, and I'd like to thank you so much for being here with us tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you, Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I want to thank you guys. You guys are amazing, and keep doing what you do. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe.
You too.
Thanks to all our listeners out there for being here with us tonight. Tune in 2 weeks as we'll have with us another amazing guest named Barbara Whiff. For those of you who'd like to learn more about Stephanie and Solomon, or to book a private or group Solomon session, go to our website at stephanie-banks.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at solomonlive.com. Thanks again, everyone, and have an amazing week.